Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I know those temps are getting a little bit crispy. I hope wherever you are, you're nice and cozy and toasty and comfortable. And we have got a wonderful, wonderful guest today with a story that I think would make a great movie. We have got with us today author James Twyman, and this book, it's called The Barn Dance. It's a story about murder, as well as a place where something unexpected occurs that connects James in a way with an experience I don't think in a million years you ever would have dreamed of. James, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you are a man that's on the go all the time. For heaven's sakes, right now you're en route to an event. You have been a best-selling author with other books. You also have been given the title of Peace Troubadour.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about, and did you set out for a specific level of accomplishment and purpose, and thereby earn this title? What happened?
Well, you know, I think, like many of us, I felt a call. You know, I felt even when I was a child that there was something that I was here for. And I hear that echoed from so many people around the world that say that they always felt something when they were young and as children even. And that was certainly true for me. I was raised in a very Catholic family. And when you're having the sorts of experiences that I was having, that just meant you were supposed to be a priest. At least that's what they told me. And I tried that route. It didn't really work out for me quite as well as I thought it would. But still, that feeling, and also there was a connection that I always had to St. Francis of Assisi. You know, he's one of those people that, whether you're Catholic or even Muslim or many other religions, honor St. Francis. And there was one very unique thing about him, is that he was one of the earliest proponents of ecumenical peace and working for peace amongst different religions. And that was probably why back in 1986, Pope John Paul II, he called a gathering that had never occurred before, where he asked the leaders of the 12 major religions of the world to come to Assisi, the home of St. Francis, to simply pray the peace prayer from each of their traditions. And it was pretty revolutionary at the time, and I remember hearing about it, and not long after, someone gave me a sheet of paper that had the peace prayers that had been prayed that day. And one day I was reading that piece of paper, and as I was reading each one of the prayers, one after another, I just heard this music and picked up my guitar and began to play along. And I realized as I was doing this that it was almost as if the songs were already written, and I was just the one that was there lucky enough to catch them. And within 1 hour, all 12 of them were arranged to music, and I knew that this was a beautiful gift that I was meant to share. And that's when people began calling me the Peace Troubadour. I started traveling around, first just anywhere that people would listen, but before long I started getting invited to countries at war, like Bosnia and Iraq and many others, to share the prayers, because there was just something very, I guess, magical about them. And so that's how I got the title Peace Troubadour.
You also are the executive producer and co-writer of the film Indigo, and you directed Indigo Evolution, and also the documentary The Moses Code. And you have actually founded a seminary of spiritual peacemaking, and you make the statement that over 500 ministers have been ordained from around the world. So that adds to what you started off with in one aspect of journey, and you've ended up in a modality that I don't think you would have expected. But let's go to your book, The Barn Dance. This must have been both a labor of love, but also a book that was a process of healing for you as well. Tell us about your wife.
Well, Linda and I met right after I graduated from university in 1984, so we were both very young. She was my first real relationship and love, and as often happens when we're in our early 20s, we fall in love, we get married, we begin raising a family. But for me, as much as I loved my family, that thing I was telling you about before, whatever that call means or mm-hmm. is, I felt it, and I was struggling with how do I raise a family and follow this, and I wasn't sure, and it really got in the way of things. If I had been more mature at the time, I probably could have figured it out, but being in my early 20s, I couldn't. So Linda and I separated, but we always remained best friends and raising our daughter together. And I tried really throughout, you know, the next 15 or so years to try and, you know, bring us back together because she was really the only woman that I felt that way for my whole life. And it seemed that we were right on the verge of that happening. This is about 5 years ago now. She was looking very seriously at coming out to Oregon where our daughter and I lived and being there and, you know, looking at things again. And it was interesting because we had just celebrated our 20th anniversary, which was odd for her because she couldn't figure out why I wanted to celebrate it since we weren't really married. But for me, and what I said to her was, family is not something that is determined by a piece of paper. And the fact is we had always remained family. And we had a beautiful celebration, and I'm so glad we did because it was the last time that I ever saw her. It was only a very short while after that one morning I received that fateful phone call that Linda had been murdered. And we, at that time, and really in many ways still don't have any idea why or who or any of the details, but we do know that she was in her apartment outside Chicago and she was stabbed to death. And, of course, it's the kind of thing that you read about or see on TV, but you never think it's going to happen to someone that you love. And especially at that time when it was looking like the thing that I'd hoped for and dreamed of for so long might be actually coming to pass. And it began a long journey of course, of grieving and of loss, which is a very universal, very human experience. And really, as you said, that was the first reason I wrote this book, was because I had to, for me. I'm sure we'll go further into what happened in the barn dance, mm-hmm. but I remember after I had that experience, it really changed my life, and I called my daughter and told her a little bit about it, and I said, I'm thinking about writing a book about this, and I asked her what she thought, because, of course, she was the only one who had a veto power, and she said that she didn't think it was a good idea. Because, you know, she knew that her mom was a lot more private than she or I are. But I told her I would write the book because I had to, and that she would be the first to read it. And if she didn't agree that it was something that she wanted to share, then she would be the only one. Well, when she finally did read The Barn Dance, she said not only that she loved it, but that she felt it was important that it be published because she knew that it was going to help so many other people who have been going through grief or loss or, you know, something similar to what we had gone through.
Now, in the very beginning of the book, you say this is being promoted as a novel, but it's real life to you. This is not something that you just made up because you
That's
were
right.
visiting La La Land. This is something you actually experienced.
And you Absolutely, call it yeah.
going between two worlds. Now, you were on a trip. You, again, grief is something that all of us respond to in a different way. But you were in a location, and there were some locals that said you were in an area called Suicide Alley.
Yes.
And they gave you a warning. And
well, we should
ahead
probably
and talk
back
about
up
that
a little bit first
yeah.
because
okay.
the first time we actually, that was the second time, but the first time that I encountered this area, which is Route 140, which goes between Nevada and into eastern Oregon. It happened when my daughter and I and her best friend Heather were driving back from Chicago from Linda's funeral. We had flown out to Chicago, and I decided that we should drive back just so we would have time to decompress. So we bought a car in Chicago. We were driving back, and after about 3 days of this, the girls really were tired of driving. So Heather spotted a route that looked like it would take a good half day or more off the journey. But this was in December and of 2005, and so it, you know, I know what mountain passes can be like. And so we checked, but everything seemed fine. The weather was good. The conditions were fine. So we began, and it's about at least 200 miles between towns. And we were about halfway, and it began to snow and then a blizzard. And we couldn't see more than 2 or 3 feet in front of the car. And the only thing I could see was the fact that we were driving on one side with a straight cliff and the other side was a straight drop, about 300 feet down, no guardrail, literally feet away from, you know, us to the left. And, of course, my only thought and fear was, please, let us get through this, because it was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, a rabbit runs out in front of the car, and I must have swerved because we began to slide toward the edge. And that feeling of helplessness as the car begins to slide and there's nothing you can do, and it literally stops 6 inches from going over the side of this cliff. So that was in 2005. And now we'll jump ahead 3.5 years, which was just, you know, a bit more than a year ago now, but a year and 3 months. I found out through an email that someone had just confessed to Linda's murder. Now, this was the first we'd heard of anything like this, and it was almost like ripping a scab off a wound. I was right at that point where I was beginning to feel somewhat healed. And when I found this out, it took me right back to the beginning, right back to those deep feelings of grief. And the other thing was that I couldn't stop thinking about that cliff. It was like I was obsessed with it. It almost reminded me, I don't know if you remember in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when the mm-hmm. Richard Dreyfuss character, he can't stop thinking about that mountain. He's sculpting it with mashed potatoes. It was almost right. Like that. And I didn't know what to do except to go back, and as if something would happen. And what you were referring to before was when I met a Native American gentleman, you know, not in the town before you get to that area, and he was mm-hmm. the one who told me that to his people, this was a very, very sacred area. The locals called it Suicide Alley because so many people had gone over the edge. But to the Native people, this was a very, very sacred area. And he said that there were certain meadows and areas in the wilderness that only the chief or the medicine man would be allowed to go because it was so sacred. So immediately I sensed that there was something being orchestrated that I didn't understand, but I had to follow through on.
Now, this was Victor, the yeah. Native American, and he had actually left a note for you so mm-hmm. that you would be aware that he was aware that there was something significant going on in your life, because there was in this letter, he said, if you get this letter, you're probably on your way to the highway. That means you didn't take my advice not to continue, so I hope you'll consider what I'm about to tell you. And he goes into some information. And one of the other things that you bring up in the story is that you had also known Neil Donald Walsh. And, you know, he said to you, the visions, you were having experiences, and he said the vision you had, it doesn't show up unless there's a reason for mm-hmm. it, and obviously it's something you need to learn. So let's move forward to a time span. And by the way, those of you that are listening to this, you're going to have to get the book to read all the extra details, because I'm not going to go into that. That would just destroy the book. But there's another person that comes into the picture, and this is a man who lives in this area that is
in the wilderness.
Considered, yes, in the wilderness. It is a very, very special area, and it is a sacred portal. And that is where the title, The Barn Dance, comes in from. And his name, again, is Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about Richard and how you met him.
Well, as I said, I did not take Victor's advice, and I did move forward, and I found the spot that I was almost sure was the spot that we had almost gone over the edge. It was almost as if it was seared into my mind because it was such a scary experience. And even though it was night, there were a couple of landmarks that caught my attention. And so I found the spot. And one of the odd things was that I looked down at the bottom of the cliff and I saw a car. It was a silver car. And that was all I could really tell. And the car that I had been driving back to Oregon was a silver BMW. So I felt like I had to get down there somehow. So I found a way that I could get down there somewhat safely. And I got to the car, and though there was no way for me to prove whether, you know, whose car it was literally a silver BMW. Well, about that time, I decided I had to get back up because otherwise, the sun was going to set, and I would never be able to make it up because it would be far too dangerous. And I realized that I was lost. I really had gotten myself turned around. Luckily, it was August, and I didn't have to worry about the cold, so I just sat down and figured I'd wait for the sun to come up and get some sleep. And this was when I met Richard. If you could imagine being in this wilderness, thinking that, I mean, there are no towns for probably 50 miles. Mm-hmm. And as far as I could tell, no roads, no houses. And I'm just sitting there, and I hear someone coming near me or something until I realize that it is a person. And this is Richard, who apparently has a cabin nearby, and he just felt, I guess maybe if you're out there by yourself all the time, you feel the presence of someone, and he did. And he told me that he could help me the next morning get back up to my car. But that night he told me something that was so unusual and struck me as so odd. He said, there's a party going on at a barn nearby. Now, once again, I didn't think there was anybody out there, so the idea that there would be enough people to have a barn dance struck me as really crazy. But he said, you should come. It'll be a lot of fun. And I said, why not? And so we did. We went along this path until we came to this barn. There were no cars or anything, so I had no idea how anybody could have gotten there. But sure enough, it was filled with really interesting people, different, very wide variety of different people. And I just started walking around, being introduced to a few people by Richard. And then, of course, this is where the story really takes off, because at one point I'm standing there in the barn. I look to the other side, and I see someone that I, of course, never expected to see, someone that almost made me pass out when I did see her, because standing on the other side of the room was my wife, Linda. Mm-hmm. And yet it wasn't, it was very odd. And of course, you think your eyes and your mind are playing tricks on you, because it wasn't Linda at 43 when she died. It was Linda at 22 when I first met her. And a conversation began there that lasted 3 days, because I did come back to the barn three different times. And once I began to relax and understand what was going on, well, of course, I didn't really fully understand what was going on because it was beyond my understanding. But what I was able to piece together was that, from Richard and from others, is that there are certain places on this earth where it's almost like there's a crease in the time continuum or something. And mm-hmm. And this was a spot that where heaven and earth literally collide. And Richard discovered this himself because he had been wandering through this area. He was hiking, and he came across this meadow where there were all these people just kind of hanging out and having a fun time. And he was surprised, just as I was, because it was, it was in the wilderness. So he went over to investigate and ultimately realized that these were not just ordinary people that he had encountered, but these were people that were not of this world. Almost as if every night at a certain time, some sort of a portal opens up and these people just find themselves remembering what it's like to be human. And every once in a while, he said, someone like me will come along who is there to remember what it is to be divine. And the two worlds intersect. So that was his experience. Ultimately, what they did was they built a barn, which was meant to almost enclose the experience, and that's where we were that night. So I'm sure anyone putting themselves in my position of having lost someone that they love so much and then seeing them there, of course there's the shock, and then there's, you know, the desire just to remain. You know, I remember when Richard said that you'll be here until you learn whatever lesson you have to learn. And I remember thinking and even saying, great, then I won't learn anything. Because why would I want to leave?
Mm-hmm. There are so many experiences that are classified as paranormal because people will say, well, you can't prove them, so it means it's out of the norm. But there have been stories that I've heard through the years, experiences I've had with people that have passed on to the other side, and just materials, documented information that has been given for God knows how many years, stories passed along in families about visitations and experiences. What makes this so unique is how these people actually choose to come to this place because they're trying to find themselves. And Linda she had no memory of you. You're the one that remembered her. And there were things that she taught you, and you in turn brought an awareness to her as well.
Yes.
And it's a very fascinating paradigm to observe and to read. And I think that when I was going through the book, The Association with a Bridge Between Worlds, and some people might hear this story and say, well, show me the place, I'll go there and I'll let you know whether it's real or not. But that's not the way these places are. It's not like you turn them on and off like you do a television set. It is an entirely different environment, and it's as if it is selective opportunity where you're in the right place at the right time.
And it's almost like, I think it's Wayne Dyer who said, instead of you'll believe it when you see it, you'll see it when you believe it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
And I think that was in part true for me, that I was open to it because my life is pretty saturated with the mystical, and I've written a lot of books on it. So I was certainly open to seeing it. And then the other thing that I think made it happen was my need. Because of the grief. And once again, this is something that is so human. And yet we have this tendency to, you know, especially those of us who are spiritual in nature or pursuing spiritual growth, mm-hmm. we almost think that it's, that we should push those experiences away. Like, and we try and convince ourselves that that we're okay when we're not. Like, I remember when we first lost Linda, quite a few very well-intentioned people would come up and they would say things like, well, you know that Linda chose this on a soul level, right? And I know that I'm called the peace troubadour, but I didn't feel so peaceful in that moment mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. what I wanted to scream was, would you just allow me to be human for a moment mm-hmm. and to feel this? And not, you know, it felt like metaphysical malpractice to me, you know, to try mm-hmm. and get me through it quickly, because they were uncomfortable, instead of holding my hand and allowing me to just be in it. And one of the people who did that was, as you mentioned, Neil Donald Walsh, who's one of my best friends, and he's like my brother, and he flew out to Chicago immediately and just stood at my side. And one of the things that I often say, you know, he's obviously a very, very well-known author, but it wasn't Neil Donald Walsh who showed up. It mm-hmm. was Neil.
Mm-hmm.
It was my friend, and he just stood there, and he didn't have to draw attention to himself, and that was such a gift to me. He didn't try and fill me with spiritual aphorisms. He just stood there,
mm-hmm.
and that was so vitally important. So this has taught me so many lessons on the importance of this, you know, the feeling of loss. And I realized through this that it's really only when the heart breaks open that the divine can fully enter in. And that's why these moments are so important, and why it's critical that we not think that we have to push them away or get rid of them, but to rather embrace them and to realize that this is my spiritual path right now.
I think part of, as someone once said, our grief is because that which we love is no longer with us physically. And I remember a very, very famous healer. Her name was Olga Worrell. And this woman, she and her husband had worked together as a team for years. And when he died, her remarks were not unlike yours. This is a woman that communicated with people on the other side regularly. And her husband, when he died, people would say, well, you don't need to grieve because, you know, he's always with you. And it's interesting how our intellect, because this is what we emphasize so much culturally, the analytical side. Yes, you can know things, but that doesn't mean you won't miss someone. That doesn't mean that you're not going to have the pain. And it is so deep, and it is such an awareness. And
yes,
with Linda's death, because of your obsession, because of your, for all of your intellectualization, your need to grow into a new understanding and to really get it on. And she was your teacher. And that's one of the beauties, I think, and I use the plural for a reason, because I think there was so much exchange. She explained about multiple universes, which a quantum physicist would just absolutely love.
Yeah.
But then we'd say, well, prove it to me, prove it to me. Well, there are things, I don't care what anybody says. You hold them in your heart. You know that they're true. And the best you can do is to try to express it. And hopefully it'll resonate with someone who is listening. And maybe it'll help them understand certain things. But your process of grief, which I think is important to relate to also, it took time. And you had to go through that journey of grief and being alone. And that can be anything from a loved one's death to having everything taken away from you, like in Hurricane Katrina, or you witness things. I mean,
yeah,
grief comes in all kinds of costumes.
That's right.
All kinds of costumes. So your book is so powerful, and I know that we're out of time. I think that for the holidays, this would just be a wonderful, wonderful gift to give to someone that perhaps is going through their own changes, but it's someone that loves the mystical, because this really is a true story. And yes, it is going to feel like maybe you're reading a novel, but it's not. James, what is your website that people can go to?
Well, people can go to James Twyman, which is TWYMAN.com. And there's, of course, a lot of more information there on the site. In fact, there's a little short movie that we did. And as you said, well, we're hoping that this is going to be made into a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking pretty good at this moment. I think that this is a story that needs to be told, and I think would probably make a better movie than it is a book.
Mm-hmm.
So we're keeping our fingers crossed for that.
Well, I think it's definitely going to be that. One of the statements that's in your book is nothing ever ends because love goes on forever.
That's right.
And I think that those words are very, very powerful. The book is well done for those of you listening. If you would like to take a journey via something you can hold in your hand, read it if you will. Sometimes it'd be good just to read it maybe before you went to sleep at night. Go to JamesTwyman.com, and that's JamesTwyman. James, we've got about 35 seconds. Is there a comment you'd like to leave with my listeners before we close?
Well, only that we live in an extraordinary time, and I think adventures like mine are happening to so many people because this is the time of a great awakening, and we're all part of it. The worlds are beginning to merge, just as I experienced. And this is not science fiction, it's reality, and we can all be part of that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And we've got more choices and more options than we're led to believe. And
that's
your book
sure
addresses that, James. Thank you ever so much for being my guest today. Happy travels and success.
Thank you.
Wherever
been my are honor. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, good things to share with you, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about Glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free number to call into, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Just a little bit of whimsical stuff, which I don't know that you're going to be excited about, but since I was doing it myself earlier today, and I've got this adorable picture of a kitten up in a tree, and it's a golden orange kitten, and it's just surrounded by all of these autumn leaves, and it's saying, if you really want to not get the sniffles, go out and sweep leaves. Believe me, I was doing that earlier. We have had some furious winds here. And, just after everything had been cleaned up, of course, that comes with the month of November. That's what fall is all about. And the temperatures have dropped considerably, and the winds were blowing furiously. So everything that was nice, neat, and tidy and in order after being blown away from the previous storm, well, we had an abundance right there waiting for us. And all the colored leaves are there. You know, having fall activities is really a good way of building up or enforcing a strong immune system. Why? Because when you're out of doors, they have found, after 20 years of research by Carnegie Mellon University, that when people are outdoors doing activities, something so simple as sweeping leaves, they're not as likely to get sick when they're exposed to the cold and flu viruses. Why? You're just out. You're enjoying things. When you stay inside, or if you are like I've been, you're around a bunch of people, and goodness gracious, everything's confined. Have you ever been on a plane where it seems like everybody and their brother is coughing, hacking, sneezing? It's like a NyQuil commercial, you know, 50,000 times stronger than what you're seeing on television. Well, when you can be out, when you keep taking care of yourself, and when you're out and about physically, it seems to get that positive flow within the self. And they've actually been able to evaluate wellness with people. So positive emotions halt the flow of cortisol, which is a stress hormone proven to weaken the immune system. So just keep yourself in good shape. Go out there and sweep all those golden colored leaves in whatever color they might happen to be. But it might be a good idea until you wait until all the wind blows everything off the trees. But regardless, there's something about being out in the fresh air that's just magical. I don't know. It's just something I've always enjoyed. And I don't know if you have kids and you're out raking up leaves, do they do what I used to do when I was a kid? I can remember being at my grandparents, and they had a brick wall, and I'd rake all of these leaves up. And I was so good because that was my job, and I piled them really high. Then I would go, and I'd get up on the concrete wall, and I'd jump right in the middle of the leaves. Of course, they went in every different direction imaginable. Then I had to go out and sweep them all up again. But it was a game I played, and I don't think it was appreciated much by the adults. But there's something about being outside that really does help maintain health. So get out and walk. Don't be afraid of cold. Don't be afraid of breezes. Get out there and enjoy yourself. Now, if you're dying of pneumonia, that may not be such a good idea. But help your body to stay healthy. Too many times we become so isolated and we don't do that. So that little kitten up in the tree captured my heart. And you know what? I just think that whoever took the picture was in the right place at the right time. But see, because seeing a kitten like that up in that tree with all that fall foliage, I don't know. I don't think I've ever had that experience, but that photographer caught it absolutely perfect. Also, you can call the U.S. Forest Service's free fall color hotline for weekly updates on fall foliage color changes in whatever part of the country that you live in. And this is their toll-free number, 800-354-4595. And they also have a website that you can go to. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I'd be delighted to give you a reading. I got an email from someone today that said, gee whiz, I would really like to have contact with you, and I told them about the radio show. Now, they may have to work, but sometimes people are in a tough economic positioning. I do private appointments, but hey, whenever you talk to me on the air, it doesn't cost you a penny. That's right. It's free, and I'm happy to provide that. I've been doing that for years, and it's my pleasure to do it for you. So give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Rio. This is one dynamic woman, and she has just got so many wonderful points of information regarding nutrition and wellness. And hey, we're coming into this time of the year where colds and flu viruses are just having a field day. And a lot of us are going to be out shopping. We're going to be in malls. The holidays are coming. Remember, wherever you go, when you have large concentrations of people, it's easy to pick up stuff and not even know that you've been exposed to something. So we're going to find out about how you can keep yourself healthy and sassy, feel good about who you are, and just really enjoy good food. And it doesn't make any difference whether you are a meat eater, a vegan. I think Rio has something to offer. Also, we are going to be talking about Nostradamus on Wednesday, and I think that Peter Leismeyer is going to be giving us some perspectives that you would not have imagined. We're going to be talking about Nostradamus and some of his history. Then, yes, those little fur people, dogs, they're going to have a special place on Thursday. Robin Fritz is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about bridging species, and it's all about dogs. Then, on Friday, we were talking about staying healthy. Well, we're going to be learning something that really is nothing new. It really isn't. But it is coming to our awareness, and what is it? Stealth germs. Dr. Daniel is going to be our guest on Friday, and he's going to be giving us some real lowdowns on what is behind a lot of disease and illnesses that people have been suffering from for years. And it's been very difficult for the medical community to accept the simplicity of this information. It isn't actually that simple because it's extremely complex. It's involving bacteria and viruses, and they are phenomenal little critters. But I'll tell you what, I think you'll find Dr. Daniel's information insightful, and more than that, it's going to make you aware of how important it is to be proactive with your health. It's very, very important. Donna Sebo here. If you'd like to give me a buzz to chat, I would be delighted to give you an intuitive reading on the air, 888-815-9756 is the number to call into. I wanted to talk to you about two women today whom I have a great deal of appreciation for. It is two women, Sarah and Katie. Now, these are women that never in a million years would have thought that they were going to end up becoming entrepreneurs. If you are an individual that's going through some changing moments in your life right now, and maybe you decide you'd like to do a business of your own, I think that this story is one that's going to intrigue you. So in a couple of minutes, we're going to be going on break. So I'll tell you the story after we go on break. But I also wanted to give you a little bit of detail about your inner self. Yes, 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 yes. This is just something intuitive, and just give me a minute. This has to do with Celtic astrology, or you can pronounce it Celtic astrology, whichever way is proper for you. I knew of it as Celtic. Now, Celtic astrology was very close to Earth, and it related to animals. So I'm going to go by date signs, astrological signs, and I'm going to give you what in Celtic astrology is going to be a meaning for you. If you were born between December 24th and January 20th, your Celtic sign is that of a deer. You're gentle, you're patient, you're also pretty tough whenever it's necessary, and sometimes people underestimate your strength. You're graceful, you're a person that has a regal presence about yourself, you hold yourself to high ideals, and the Celts associated the deer with art, music, and poetry because deer are quiet. They have a wonderful demeanor and it's very peaceful about themselves. So don't be surprised if there's an artistic side of you that's coming alive. Well, that's just one of the Celtic astrology signs. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. So when we do, I'll be sharing the story about the Spice Girl. Spicy and some unexpected ways. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. A little bit more of Celtic astrology when we come back, and something about spice, so don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, let me give you one of other of those astrological projections in Celtic astrology. You know, you share traits with what they call your guardian animal. Now, again, this is with a different culture. And I always think it's fun to talk about things from different environments because I think it gives pause. It makes you think. So let's go to January 21st. Let's do this in order, to February the 17th. Now, the animal symbol for that period of time is that of the cat. Now, the cat to Celts felt like this was very special, as all signs are. Cats are very perceptive, they're quick-minded, and they have a sharp wit. And the Celtic cat is known for its intuition, reasoning abilities, and problem-solving. Now, as we all know, cats are extremely independent. They have their own attitudes, and they definitely will let you know if you are going to be acceptable to them. Aloof is a word that might fit them quite nicely. However, cats usually are doing observing and often see more than what meets the eye. So, December 24th to January 20th, deer. January 21st to February 17th, cat. We'll be talking about the others starting in February with the rest of this week. We'll be covering some of that. But I think it's, again, I think it's fun. I like to chat about things like that. All right, these are two women, Sarah and Katie, and they've been given the name of the Spice Girls, and I have a picture of them in front of them. Now, Sarah used to be a journalist. That was her passion. She loved to write. And she said she just absolutely loved it. And she was 20 years as an editor and columnist at the Baltimore Sun. And she said she just always enjoyed working there. But there was a place that wasn't too far away that when they were doing their processing, just absolutely, she just was enthralled by these fragrances that would come out, these aromas. It was something that just absolutely was wonderful. Well, not too long, a few years after she started working for the Baltimore Sun, she found that McCormick Spice Company moved into the suburbs of the area where she was. Now, she wasn't known. She was not a cook. However, when she had her son, as he got older, when he was about 10, she decided she wanted to stay home with him. And she said she had had the opportunity to interview Julia Child and that she was breaking the story open, which was just marvelous, that she was donating the kitchen to the Smithsonian. And she was surprised in doing the story on Julia Child that Julia Child hadn't gotten into food until she was middle-aged. And she goes, that's interesting. You know, you see Julia Child, you think that this had always been her passion all of her life, but that was not the case. She really hadn't gotten into her passion until her middle-aged years. Well, when she left the journalist positioning, she had a friend that moved into her area. Her friend's name was Katie, and she was a working mom, like so many moms are. And she wanted to get into something new. Now, they became very, very good friends. And they had an interest in cooking. And she said they would get together and just try different things. And they were having all kinds of fun. And she said she was interested, as was Katie, in spices. And she said she got interested in cinnamon and they would study it. And she said there were so many stories about cinnamon that went back literally thousands of years. And she said then you found out about the Puritans and how they brought dill and fennel into their churches to chew on during long sermons. And of course, at that time, they would talk for hours. So I guess they chewed on this because they had to appease their hunger. Well, one day, Katie and Sarah were in their kitchen, and in Sarah's kitchen, and she said, my spice cabinet was a disaster. She said, I had spices there that hadn't been used in years, and she said, oh, this is just unbelievable. Now, I'm going to tell you something that turned these two women into entrepreneurs right in their own kitchens. Sarah and Katie were talking about how much waste there was with the spices. They were just going over it. And Katie said, you know, how many times have we opened up a container of spice when we got a pot of something cooking on the stove or in the oven? We open it up and we've got our spice, whatever we're going to use, we're sprinkling it over something, and we've exposed it to moisture and to hot air. Wouldn't it be nicer if we had spices in smaller packages? Aha, you got it. That's right. They started a company called the Seasoned Palate, Inc. They sell organic spices in single-use packets, so they're always fresh. That's right. They will not clutter up your cabinets either. They have already put out two cookbooks, A Spice Kitchen and Spice Dreams. And Sarah says it's really a long way from when she got dinner and it was always burned. She's come a long way. She's really become quite a good cook. She said, you know what? Who would have ever dreamed that two women just experimenting in a kitchen would end up coming up with an idea to revolutionize the use of spices? Well, look at how many packaged spices we have in the store that we can get. Taco mix seasonings, they've been around for years. Well, these ladies have their own, and it's really absolutely marvelous. So you can just find out, you know, check out for the Spice Girls, Sarah and Katie, two great gals. They started a business, and they're smiling every day when they go to the bank, and they're loving what they're doing. And you can do the same. Now, I'm not saying you're going to want to go out and start a company on your own, but I do think that it behooves us to be open and receptive to opportunities that might come our way. And sometimes when we're talking out loud to people or just brainstorming, there may be an aha moment. And a good thing to do, let me just share this with you quickly because someone shared it with me. There was a business that was floundering, and this business was having a terrible time. And finally, one of the ideas that popped up on the part of the executives was, we're going to have a brainstorming meeting, and we're going to involve all of the employees. We're going to have a bunch of whiteboards, so they pulled them into a meeting room. And this wasn't a real big company. The company wanted to grow, but they couldn't go anywhere. No matter what they tried, it just wasn't working, and their budget was limited. Economy wasn't all that hot. They needed to come up with something new. So they said, throw ideas out. The employees were brought in. Everybody brainstormed. And some people got so discouraged and so bored that they'd say some of the dumbest things, but they wrote everything down. And then it was as if the brainstorming all came together. And after everybody had a chance to get a good night's sleep and they went back at it again, they said, okay, we know we can't use this. And they erased the things that they knew were not usable. And then they had left this quagmire of what was possibility. And it was out of those various sentences that they were able to pull out a plan. They were able to connect the missing links, if you will. And someone popped out with a statement and said, oh, we can do EFG instead of AXYZ. And they go, EFG? And then somebody said, no, that won't work because of such and such. Well, then why don't we take a little bit of Q, and what about R, and let's throw in a little bit of A. What have we got? So they were literally putting a puzzle together. Amazing stuff. So you may find that you have talents and abilities that can be utilized in ways that you would never have dreamed, just like these Spice Girls. Well, this is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You never know when an opportunity is going to shape your life and give you impetus for a new direction. Be open, be receptive. James Twyman was with a tragedy, and his life was changed dramatically because of it. You never know how the universe is going to gift you. This is Donna Sebo. Take care. Talk with you same time, same place tomorrow, right here on BBSRadio.com, station number one. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.